This is the Simon Dell Show, where we take a deep dive into some of the week's most notable business and marketing stories and interview high-performing business leaders and marketing professionals to find out their lessons for success.
You know, I think it's staying relevant. The sustainability thing is massive. I mean, really, it's telling the right stories and creating the connection. It's just always cool to buy from your brand. People want to be cool.
Welcome to the Simon Dell Show, episode number 42. It is the meaning of life episode. For those of you that don't understand the reference, just Google 42, the meaning of life, and it'll all become absolutely clear to you. And you'll probably think, what the hell has he been watching? But for those of you that are Douglas Adams fans out there, you'll all appreciate that. Now, listen up. This week, we have the fantastic head of marketing from Merlot Coffee by the name of Anna Kerwick. And she is on the show. For those of you that are fans of coffee, and for those of you that aren't fans of coffee, this is a fantastic chance to understand how Merlot Coffee take their business to market, how they do business in what is an incredibly, incredibly competitive marketplace. For those of you that don't know, the coffee market in Australia is very sophisticated and kicks out people like Starbucks because people don't really like that low quality mass marketed coffee. But it's interesting to hear her opinions and ideas about what she does differently and how Merlot do things differently in order to grow and or maintain and grow their market share. So really, really interesting, completely different format for what I normally do. We just started talking about Merlot and then that's kind of where we ended up. But she's also got experience running her own business. She ran an accessories or built an accessories business selling handbags, clutches and jewelry back in 2010. And she's also been a owner of a franchise for Bartercard. And again, for those of you that don't know Bartercard, that's probably worth looking up because that's quite a unique brand and proposition. Some of you may have had experience with it. Some of you still may have experience with it. Some of you may have had good experiences with it. And some have had probably some slightly more questionable experiences with it. But interesting to hear her opinion on where that used to sit in the marketplace and whether that does still have a presence or a position in the marketplace. So look, Anna's very, very, very interesting. So definitely you'll enjoy that one. The few other things, obviously, number one, please rate and review us on iTunes. We would very much appreciate that. And number two, if you do want to come and talk to us about anything from a digital marketing perspective, come and find us at www.simondell.com, or you can talk to us at hello@simondell.com. And we're on all the other social media platforms that you could possibly think. Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, you name it, we're there. So yeah, come and connect with myself and my business partner, Matt. Have a come and chat with us. And especially if you'd like some help in any particular area with digital marketing, we can definitely help you out. Otherwise, sit tight and listening to Anna Kerwick from Merlot Coffee. Welcome to the show today, Anna Kerwick from Merlot. Welcome.
Thanks very much for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, for those people that are perhaps not Australian, I want you just to kind of give us the little bit of information about who Merlot is and what they do.
Okay, well, Merlot is, well, definitely Queensland, if not Australia's, one of Australia's and definitely Queensland's largest independently owned coffee roasters. We started out in 1992, so 26 years ago next week, actually.
Cool.
Dee Merlot started the business, and effectively we're coffee roasters. We buy beans from all over the world. We roast them. We have cupping teams and expert roasters who source and create the best blends that you can possibly purchase. We run 16, soon to be 17 retail outlets ourselves as Merlot owned stores. But the biggest part of our business is actually the wholesale division. So we supply wholesale beans to nearly 1,500 cafes around Australia.
Wow.
So we're roasting nearly 20 tons of coffee every week. We have a concentration in southeast Queensland, but we have customers in Adelaide, Melbourne, northern New South Wales, Sydney, and we also have an online store that has all of our products available. So we're pretty much sent to anywhere in the world, to be totally honest. We've got some pretty diehard coffee fans
right. Who
know their blends and what they like, and so they'll purchase online, especially those who are, you know, originally from Australia and get the taste for it and then decide to move overseas for work but still want to get great coffee.
Fantastic. Now, I'm not going to go too much into the Dean Merlot story because there's quite a big story about him in terms of, you know, the business and all those kind of things, because he's not on the show. You're on the show. and you've got a very interesting background yourself. But I also just want to touch on, because I have had experience working with a couple of competitor brands in my past, not recently, but in my past. But I just want people to understand how competitive and cutthroat the coffee industry is in Australia.
It's incredible. I mean, there's just every single week there is another boutique roaster popping up. There's millions and millions of cups of coffee sold in cafes around Australia every single week. It's huge. And it's got its own market. It's like a stock exchange. You know, there's people constantly trading online for beans and watching the bean prices and how the dollar and the exchange rate affects that. So, and there's so much that goes into what you buy every morning on your way to work. You know, we have bean brokers who contact us, and our head of operations, Simon, who's also a qualified Q grader. That's actually in its own right a very specialised role, and there's, you know, less than 70 in Australia who have actually got that qualification. So he works closely with the suppliers. He actually goes to origin and goes to the farms themselves sometimes and visits the growers, you know, in Colombia and all around the place. And he will he'll work with our CEO, James, to source the best beans. And then we've got a cupping team who are constantly tasting and tweaking, and they work, obviously the roasters are always just making little adjustments to come up with the best taste. So we try and cater for every taste, but I mean, it's just incredible. There's just constant competition and changes and new machinery and even machinery trends. You know, there's beautiful machinery that comes on the market, and people always want the latest and greatest, obviously. So keeping up to date with machinery and supplying that to customers is a constant, not battle, but it certainly it's a full-time job just doing that in its own right, and being aware of trends. I mean, you know, we've had everything from turmeric lattes to coffee served in waffle cones, and some people will serve it in avocado shells.
Oh, dear, yeah.
You know, the thing about coffee is that it's a lifestyle. It's part of everyone's lives. Like, you know, I mean, I didn't have my first cup of coffee, I don't think, until I was in my 20s, whereas now we've got high school students who are in every day. So the range of age of customers has increased. The competition in terms of loyalty has definitely increased, and that's a huge part of what we do. I mean, we work so hard to get new customers, both in our wholesale and our retail divisions, but keeping them customers is probably more important to us than anything. So service and delivery and just, you know, being friendly and being nice.
Do you think there's a people
buy their coffee, they want to see a smiling face at the end of their exchange. So
do you think there's a problem with not a lot of people, not a lot of people outside Australia would understand that Starbucks kind of invaded Australia however many years ago and got sort of unceremoniously got booted out, or not completely booted out, but almost totally booted out.
And yet they're massive in China, in the Asian countries.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
In China alone this year, they will open over 600 stores. So,
But I think that that was one of the reasons that was that happened was their inability to two things that I believe was their inability to judge the local market. And the second thing was that I think the Australian taste for coffee is much more sophisticated than perhaps the North American market. And I would argue the Chinese market as well.
Well, if you talk to anybody who travels overseas, normally the first comment they say is, oh, God, it was so hard to get a decent coffee. And I think in other countries it's potentially about the churn and the volume as opposed to the taste.
Yeah.
Whereas here in Australia, as you say, like the customers really know what they like and what they don't like, and they have very acquired tastes. And that's potentially where the loyalty comes into play because, you know, most that it's pretty much common knowledge really that customers will drive past five cafes yeah. to go to their preferred cafe because they like the way the barista there makes their coffee. So you have to have the best coffee. It has to be roasted the best way and it has to be fresh. And I think from Merlot's perspective, that is the key, is that we roast daily. Our coffee is sent immediately after roasting so that it's as fresh as absolutely possible. Whereas Starbucks, I can't say for sure, I don't know their operations and how it all works, but a lot of other coffee companies are dealing in such huge volumes, they can't keep it fresh. Mm. It's just physically not possible and they don't have the distribution to do so. And, you know, that's why we're sort of against pods because the coffee that you find in pods, as much as espresso is massive and they've done an amazing job in what they've done in selling the whole pod machine at home kind of campaign, the coffee that you'll get in those pods is nowhere near what you'll get from your local barista down the road because it's probably roasted 6 months ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's completely different. So I think that's our problem, you know, definitely our USP is that it's so fresh. It's, you know, it's you can't get much closer to the source really.
Yeah. Just a slight anecdote there. My brother is one of those coffee tragics and he has a he lives in New York, so he struggles to find. Yes, yeah, he did. And he actually goes, he's been going to the same store for absolute years. In fact, moved, got an office based on the fact that it was close to where the store was because he runs his own business in New York.
Even in real estate now, I mean, that's a crucial thing. Like real estate agents are selling properties or leasing properties on the strength of the coffee shop in the building. And that's and you know, it's a definite, there's no question.
Yeah.
Because it's really important to people. Our head office is currently at Barn Hills. We're just about to move over to Eagle Farm to a much bigger premises. But we're lucky that we've got the Virgin head office around the corner.
Yes.
And
we
sometimes joke with some of the staff that are in every day. We're like, we don't know how you guys get any work done because you spend so much time over here. But I think their culture is all about conversation and networking and group meetings. And so they'll have a lot of their meetings over here.
Yeah.
And when they heard that we were moving, they were really quite concerned. They were like, but where are we going to get our coffee? And we're like, don't worry, we'll keep the coffee shop open, that's fine.
I was going to say, you're keeping the one in Bowen Hills. I would. Yeah,
yes, yeah. Okay. So we actually will still operate the roasting facility out of this building.
Yeah.
But the factory at the new building is, you know, multiple times the size and will give us a lot more options. So the packing and delivery.
Just on one of those earlier points you made about the competitiveness, In an environment or in a business where there is such strong competition and such strong competition from good brands, there's other good coffee brands out there.
Absolutely.
I think, you know, I don't think there's any other coffee manufacturer would you know say that there's other people who are doing it well out there. Does there become a danger that even with a premium product and a high quality product that such as you guys are producing, that it starts commoditizing the brand? And if it does or if it doesn't, how do you maintain a price when there is such competition out there?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the key thing for us is packaging it as more than just a product. We're very much about service. So when you buy the product, you also get the staff who will do, whether it's in-store, they'll do, you know, they'll know your name by heart and they'll call you by name. So it's actually about the full picture. And we don't discount. We prefer to say we will value add. So you will never get a special on Mellow Coffee because we really believe in the product. We don't overprice it in the first place. We make it reasonable and it's a quality product. So we'll always value add rather than discount it. There's a lot of competition and sometimes, you know, especially in the wholesale area, that's hard because there's new coffee companies who desperately want a bigger pie, a slice of the pie of the market, and they're very competitive. And so they will undercut or discount heavily at their own expense for the sake of getting the business on from a volume perspective, because obviously the more volume they have, the more equipment they can justify and finance and so forth. So it's a sort of never-ending cycle there. But I think when you are always keeping relevant and you're, I think it's answering customers' needs. Like, you know, if they've got the option of five different suppliers, why are they going to keep coming back to us? Yeah. And loyalty is like it's key. That's what our whole marketing department is pretty much run around loyalty.
You mentioned value add there. Can you give us some examples of how you guys would value add to a wholesale customer, not necessarily to an end user, but to another, you know, somebody who's starting a cafe or has got a small chain of cafes? What other things would you do in order to kind of keep their business?
Yeah, well, the value add for wholesale is obviously experience in the coffee industry. So there's a lot of new customers who will be starting a coffee shop for the first time. So we employ the most qualified roasters and the most qualified account managers who know heaps of information about machinery and store layout and workflow. We offer free training. So when you come on as a customer, you'll always get a qualified trainer who'll come in and sit there with your own staff and actually make coffees on your machine in your store so that it's not our training operations that you're coming to visit and our super duper machines. You'll actually be making it within your own store. So that whole process of where you get your milk out of your fridge and where it sits in the bench and what side of the machine your grinder sits on, you'll get very hands-on help in that regard in terms of how to operate your best way every day when you're operating your cafe. You know, they're all very personable people who are literally – they become part of the family, actually. Mm. So, you know, they know the customer's kids' names, they know their birthdays, they'll be dropping in a couple of times a month. They're at the end of the phone all the time. They all give their personal mobile phone numbers. So for the customer, it's really good for them to know that they've got that person there whenever they have an issue. And, you know, things happen. You're dealing with water, electricity, steam. In terms of machinery, there's quite often issues. And so to have that that person who's literally a phone call away is always a massive value add, and it gives people a lot of reassurance that they're not doing it on their own. The big thing I think too is consistency. So our coffee blends will always pretty much taste the same. They're not going to be affected by outside factors as much. We've got a pretty streamlined, massive professional operation. So if you order a particular blend and that's the blend your customers become accustomed to and like, you can be pretty much guaranteed that you're going to get the same taste all the time. Things like the grinder settings and so forth will change that. And so that's where that account manager would come in and adjust your grind for you. You know, like on a windy day, you'll have to adjust your grind. So little factors like that for someone who's coming into the business without much background knowledge is crucial to have. It's, you know, it's just backing them up in that personal way and obviously giving them, you know, the access to further training and more information and cuppings with us. Cuppings are pretty important because you get to find out more about...
Explain to people who might not know what a cupping is.
Okay, so a cupping is a very controlled environment. In the real professional sense, you don't eat beforehand, you don't affect your taste palates. So the coffee will be there in green bean state. It's then, you know, then you have the roasted state and you taste it in different forms. Like, you know, you put the hot water in, it mixes, you break the crust, you smell it. And through the process, you'll get different things. Like I can taste cherry, or I can taste mandarin, or, and it's just getting that really acquired taste of the different aspects and the tasting profile of the coffee itself, which is really important for wholesale customers because then they can establish the blend that's best suited to their style of cafe and what their customers like. So it also gives them a bit more of an idea of the process of what happens from the time it leaves the farm until it gets delivered to their door.
If you guys as a business were to lose a customer, I don't think anyone's in any illusion that even, you know, big brands lose customers and win customers. And maybe that's a better way of asking this question. If you were to lose a customer or win a customer, what would be the basis of that, do you think? What sort of switches people?
Sometimes, obviously, businesses get sold and new owners come in, and if they've got a pre-established relationship with another supplier, that quite often comes into play. Machinery. That, you know, different machinery requirements will sometimes affect it. Look, we really, obviously, we do lose customers. We don't lose them often, and we don't like it when it happens. And we do really do a lot of self-assessment afterwards in terms of contacting them and saying, was there anything we could have done differently? Is it a personal issue? Was it a price thing? When it comes to price, what I was saying before, you know, anyone can discount or drop the bottom out of their product pricing. We really don't like to do that because we believe in our product and what it's worth. But, you know, we'll always try and be competitive. And I think it's about making sure that we're offering all of the other things like service and delivery and consistency. And, you know, we do everything from sugars and milks and accessories and all of that. So potentially sometimes it comes down to even a branding conflict with other people, in that we might already have a customer very close to them and they feel like it's too close. That actually is probably the main reason why that happens. We actually have quite a bit of saturation in Southeast Queensland, so it's a bit of a juggle, really, actually making sure that we're not compromising existing customers when new customers want to come on. And sometimes customers do just go, I feel like it's time for a change. I want to see what else is out there. You know, quite often they'll come back, and that's what we hope. But you can't guarantee that's going to happen all the time, and it's just a fact of life. You know, obviously, whenever we lose a customer, we do like to make sure we did everything possible to keep them on.
The branding side of things you just mentioned there as well, I just wanted to touch on, and I think more than any brand or more than any category, the coffee category has created this huge amount of add-ons that branded things. So, you know, I mean, I say the beer category is probably fairly similar as well, but, you Absolutely. Know, category with the coffee, it could be anything from, you know, little sugars and milks to cups to umbrellas and windbreakers and all those kind of things. Do you guys still produce a lot of that?
Yes.
And you know,
yeah, I mean, not physically,
what's your,
locally,
what's your
ourselves?
Reason for giving those kind of things out?
It's the full package. You know, as I was saying before, customers are busy, they've got families, they're working really long hours, they want it. The one-stop shop is quite often really handy. I mean, it means that they're not having to chase around 8 different suppliers. They can get their sugars, their syrups, their ceramics, their tea. We sell tea. They can get everything from us, and it means that then we're responsible for helping them with all aspects of that side of the business for them. But the branding is—it's funny actually. I say to people a lot, for as many Merlot cafes that you see with Merlot signage, there is just as many that don't have our brand. Sometimes that happens because they choose to do their own custom branding. So we will actually offer our customers they've got the option to actually have a craft bag with their own logo on it, and we do that in our own factory. So it actually comes across as their brand as such. So, and we've got lots of customers who do that because it's their point of differentiation and it's establishing their own brand as well.
Do you ever go into some customers and they've produced their own point of sale, and they've used your logo, and you sit there and go, yes. Oh my God. And you have to have that really awkward conversation.
The version of our logo?
Yeah, yeah. They maybe changed the color or something, or stretched it, or yes. All the great things that people do to, pardon my French, fuck up logos. So.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that, because if you ask my CEO, he would call me the brand Nazi. And it's a bit of a pet hate for me because, you know, your brand is everything, and keeping it on point and keeping it to brand and positioning it properly is really crucial. So a huge part of what our team does is working with customers and their account managers to manage that branding process. They don't get that just racing out to a sign writer and developing their own signs with our logo on it doesn't actually always work. And it's hard to explain sometimes, but we're actually doing it for their good just as much as ours, in that by keeping the consistency of the brand and the quality and the level of professionalism, it maintains that standard for everybody, not just us, but the customers that use it as well. So we do really try and emphasize with all customers that everything to do with any production of goods with our logo on it has to be approved by us. And it, you know, it happens. It slips through the cracks, and it does happen that people go off.
What's the worst you've seen?
Oh, look, we've got a very prominent color. I don't know if I can say it without, implicating particular people, but we have a very strong blue color, and it's actually quite a difficult blue to match. So we have a set PMS color. I think people think, oh, yeah, that looks the same, and it doesn't.
That's close.
It's pretty blue. And so that's the thing, you know, people have painted their whole entire buildings in the color. And I joke, well, yeah, you'll be able to see that from space because it's so full on. I've had some pretty bad instances of dragging the mouse to make something look bigger, and it's completely distorted the logo overall. And look, you know, with all due respect, I'm not saying that people in the more regional and country areas don't know what they're doing, but they don't have the access to a lot of the really big end production companies that do signage and barriers and all of that kind of stuff. So if they're going local, you know, obviously they supply a file to the local suppliers, and they may not be aware of what we're doing in here in Brisbane and in other places, and then they'll just sort of produce their own version. It doesn't actually always look great. So I do sometimes drive down the streets and see something and go, my God, how did that get out? Who did that? How's that happened? And then sometimes even in publications, I'll find someone has gone onto a website or a version of a page of one of our, you know, of our website and copied content. And then they've cut and edited it the way they think sounds right, but it's actually not right. And I just go, I don't even know how that message got out. And look, you can't really do much once things are done. And it's hard to go back after the fact and say to people why without sounding like a nag. But I think by being proactive and setting the mark our own way, we're trying. I mean, we've just rebranded in the last year, so we're still transitioning over to our new logo and branding guidelines for all customers. There's a lot of customers that who've been with us for 20 plus years, and so their signage is quite dated, and that's not their fault. And then again, it's a very expensive process to go out and just replace every single person who's got anything with Mellow on it. So it's a gradual process that we're refreshing everything, I think, and just scaling back a little bit on the very bright, in-your-face messaging and branding and colors that used to be the way everyone did it. You know, there's a lot of as you were saying before, it all comes back to competition. There's some really very schmick brands out there who are spending fortune in their branding, and we've got to stay relevant, but we've got to stay modern and fresh as well.
I'll digress slightly because I used to work years ago at Forex. So we would obviously have exactly the same issues that you would, because, you know, there's a very specific way of which the Forex blade logo should be treated and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there was, I mean, you know, you go into every pub and they'd done something on a dot matrix printer on a piece of A4 and it was just like, oh, God, you know, you wanted to die. There's a famous urban, and I don't know whether it is an urban myth or whatever in Forex about a regional sales rep who decided that he was going to run a Forex competition in a bottle shop, and he got a chainsaw branded up with the Forex logo on it and gave that away as a prize for anyone. You got an entry into a draw if you bought a carton of Forex. And of course, there was no terms and conditions, and he had at no point realized the implications of mixing a chainsaw with alcohol.
Oh yeah, that is dangerous.
So they used to use that
good at the start.
Yeah, they used to use that one as an example to say, you know, in the best of intentions, just, you know, people need to think how brands should be treated, not necessarily all the time just with the logo. But with the associations as well about,
absolutely.
You know, Forex used to get requests every week about fathers that were coaching under 9 football teams that said, can we put the Forex logo on our kids' jersey? And they were going, that's probably not appropriate.
No, not a great message.
People don't realize, do they, how sometimes brands should be treated and preserved.
Absolutely. And it is always quite a difficult conversation to say no, because, you know, as you were saying, the dot matrix printer reminded me, we've had customers who've taken products and printed out our logo on their local color printer and then laminated it onto something else. And telling them that their idea is not great and doesn't look good is really difficult, because you don't want to hurt people's feelings. Yeah. I mean, they were doing their best. They obviously didn't want anything to look bad. Potentially, it's just not their forte. You know, they don't spend every waking day looking at branding and checking out what other people do. They just need to get something done. Or in a lot of cases, we have staff who do stuff, and then the owners of the business haven't really had a chance to think about the implications. I mean, obviously, our logo gets used a lot on menus in cafes. And just even the spatial placement and where it's put next to you can sometimes make a big difference. So, it's a constant, I wouldn't say battle, it's a constant task for us.
Constant vigilance.
Yes, that's a good
consistently good way. Vigilant.
That's a good term, actually.
I just want to ask some more technical things about you guys as a marketing department. And to be honest with you, you're 41 podcasts in or 42 podcasts in, I am now, and I have gone completely off topic with you.
Oh, that's all
the sequence of questions that I normally ask normally goes in a time. It from start to finish, but there was so many questions about Merlot because of the quality and the brand that we've gone completely off topic.
That's fine. It doesn't matter.
I did want to understand from your perspective is what sort of size team do you guys operate?
Well, it's funny actually.
What sort of skills do you have within that team?
Okay, so people are quite often amazed by the fact that we don't have a massive team. We, at the moment, I've only got 4 in my team. We have 5 and we obviously do a lot of events. So depending on events, that can change and fluctuate a bit. But in terms of hands-on day-to-day staff in the office, there's just the 4 of us. Loyalty is a massive component of our team, as I was mentioning. So we have someone who pretty much just deals with the system that records their loyalty. And when I say loyalty, that's their transactions install, you know, you get an appointment, you buy a coffee, you get every 11th coffee free.
What system do you use for that? Is it something you've custom built or something you bought off the shelf?
No, we haven't got a custom built system. We have bought off the shelf from a US-based GiveX program.
Okay.
And we actually have quite a few systems. We have an accounting and products-based system Epic Hall, which feeds into our website.
Well, that was one of my next questions was about the software and things that you use.
Yeah,
look, you guys actually use Epicor. I have some experience with Epicor.
Yes,
as well.
Yes, Epicor is our CRM that we do all of our accounting in, and we also have all our products stored in Epicor. So all of our wholesale orders go through Epicor. All of the wholesale customers' details are stored in Epicor. Look, there's a lot of other little subsystems that go off that. We obviously then have a POS system, which operates the tills in our retail stores, and that feeds back through to Givex, and so that the loyalty from the customers' transactions gets fed back into that CRM. We use a campaign monitor for a lot of our EDMs.
Okay.
We have customized management of the lists and so forth. We work very closely with an IT firm who aren't in-house, but they do a lot of work for us developing our sites and our connections and our plugins.
What are the sites built in terms of the e-commerce? Is there are you using?
So we actually at the moment are working on a WordPress website for our online store. We're in the process of going to tender and sourcing details and researching the best system moving forward, because with growth you also obviously have to plan ahead. And so it's funny you ask that, because we are literally right in the thick of assessing the next step and whether we potentially move to a Magento-based site for the e-commerce and how that links into other systems. So that's a sort of side project that I'm involved in at the moment with our IT department.
Well, we can talk offline about that, because I've built a few Magento websites in the last 18 months, actually. And to be honest with you, what I don't know about building a Magento website, you could write on the back of a cigarette packet now.
Oh, wow. Maybe we need to talk.
Well, I've done them in various different industries as well. So I'm like, pros and cons. I've got a long list of them, Anna.
That's interesting. I mean, you know, from a retail perspective, I've dealt with Magento. I've dealt with Salesforce systems. I've dealt with automated programs like Pardot or Pardo, depending on what you like to call it. So there's just so much, and it's constantly changing.
I know. We get tasked with a lot of marketing automation at the moment. And we've been doing things in Pardot, Salesforce. What's the other one? Active Campaign. Yeah. We've just started using. But the problem is there is no one size fits all. So
exactly.
You have to, with most clients, we sit there and try and assess, you know, what do they actually need? What are they going to use for this for? And to be honest with you, even when you sit there and do a very, very in-depth briefing and understanding, is that you get 3 weeks into the project and they'll sit there and go, oh, can it do this as well? And you go, it can, but it would have been good if you'd said this, you know, 3 months ago. But that is the nature of the beast, you know.
True.
You see what things can do, and all of a sudden other ideas occur to you. So
true. And I think for us, we've built our database of Friends of Mellow, we call them, which is our loyalty program, to over 65,000 active, very active members who are transacting and with us on a daily basis. So it's really important that we don't disrupt their transactions or their experiences, but we want a value add. And so, you know, then you look at apps and then you look at order ahead things, and there's a lot of opportunities, but it's a timely process, as you would know.
Yeah. We're gonna wind up soon, but the one really thing I wanted to ask you about in your past history, because for those that don't know, you've done a few jobs in the different industries.
I'm a jack of all trades. I am literally the jack of all trades. I've done everything. I'm a journalist by trade. That's what I studied at uni.
Yes.
And then I went into PR, and then I've had quite a heavy sales background, I suppose, in a lot of my roles. I worked for not-for-profits for a while, a lot of marketing and events. I've owned my own business as well. I've done a lot of freelance work.
Look, last question I'm going to ask you about one of your other previous roles was your owner of Bark Accessories.
Yes, which was a really fun time in my life. I actually loved it. And I could very well go back to doing something similar like that again.
Explain just very quickly what you were selling there and what you were making there.
So I was getting handbags and jewellery, and quite different and exclusive ones made overseas. I had a tailor from Java who I would meet over in Indonesia, and I'd go to the leather factories and I'd beautiful leathers. A lot of it was python leather, so it was quite unique and very different to what was happening here in Australia. And I think it really just looked, I love retail, I love fashion. I had young children, I wanted flexibility. I used to, you know, like many, many Aussies go to Bali a lot and would come back and I'd get things made while I was over there. And look, I've been to Bali over 30 times, so I know it pretty well and I know where to go and where not to go. And I'd established some really good contacts in the years of going over there. And so what happened is I would come back and I'd have, you know, maybe a new dress I'd have made or a handbag, and people would say, oh, my God, I love it. It's so different. Can you get me one of those next time you're over there? And yeah. So it just sort of started from there. I mean, I wanted to create a business that worked in with my young kids, gave me flexibility, meant that I could legitimately travel and claim it. And I just loved it. I loved it. I loved everything about it. I would pour over magazines for the latest in trends. I'd watch influencers and see what they were doing. And it just, look, it was probably more of a hobby business. You know, like I didn't take it big scale. I'd do local pop-ups. I had a website I sold online and I did wholesale to a few stores. But I also was doing it before some of the big chain stores like Adorn and La Visa. And that's when I decided to get out, because I could not compete with the volume and the pricing. So I was paying more wholesale to produce a pair of earrings than they were selling retail, and it wasn't worth it, because people don't always pay for quality.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I was selling a Python handbag for $350 plus, I wasn't at the Louis Vuitton level, let's just put it that way. So I didn't have the brand behind me in customers' eyes go, well, why would I spend that money when I can go to David Jones? And it may not be real, but it looks real, but it's under $100. And it was just, it was fun while it lasted. And I missed the corporate world. I missed being in a professional environment. And then my kids got older. And so, you know, I did it for nearly 7 years, I think. It was great while I did it and I loved it. But, you know, you just have, I think that's the key to making the most of it. What do they say? Make while the sun shines, make hay while the sun shines. When it's good, you go for it. When you can see the market changing, you reevaluate. Is it still going to be viable? What's the cost to me personally and financially to continue to compete with these people who've got much bigger buying power?
Look, we're going to have to wind this up, otherwise you and me will be here all day.
I love a chat. Did you notice that?
So do I as well, sadly. I'm turning into my father. My father will talk to anybody anywhere for any length of time. It's like terrible.
Well, I can say exactly the same thing. My dad's a chatter from way back.
There is a couple of other questions I wanted to ask you that I normally ask at the end. One of them is what's next for you personally? And as much as I'd like to know that, I kind of want to get your feeling as what's next for coffee. Because, you know, we're in 2018. What do you see happening in the industry in the next, let's say, 5-10 years?
I don't think demand is going to decrease. I really can't see that happening. I think people will want the experience more, in that they will want to walk to their local coffee shop or be able to very easily order ahead or have systems in place that it's just so easy that you are providing these products and experiences without them even having to do much. So from that customer experience, I think you're going to see, I wouldn't say robots making your coffee, because that's not what I'd like to see and that personal thing. But no, I think you'll see,
I don't think anyone wants to see
a lot more ordering ahead. I think you'll see a lot more customization. Yeah. Personalization is huge already. There's a lot of competition in our industry to customize cups and bags and packaging for brands, but also for people as individuals.
Do you see voice? Voice recognition has been a potential opportunity for you guys to be able to, you know, talk to Siri and say, order me a Merlot for in 30 minutes time.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, delivery, you know, we've thrown up the option of Uber Eats. Could we be that? But it's hard to do so without compromising, you know, because you don't want to deliver cold coffee. it's I think it's staying relevant and in a very competitive environment. The sustainability thing is massive. We actually have a very exciting campaign that I can't really elaborate further on, but stay tuned. Later this month, we'll be announcing something that's pretty massive here in Queensland around the sustainability thing because, cool. You know, from a takeaway cup perspective, we have a lot of responsibility to, you know, contribute to a positive impact on the environment rather than a negative. So,
well, absolutely. The whole plastic, you know, plastic single use item.
Absolutely.
Is, you know, obviously. Yeah. Getting a lot of coverage at the moment and something that, you know, everyone should be thinking about irrespective of the business they're in. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I said, how many millions of cups of coffee are sold? They all have to be delivered in a cup. So that whole thing about reusable cups and, you know, borrowing like library system for ceramics and all that kind of thing has already been discussed. Mm-hmm. And we've got things in play and in motion that will hopefully have a pretty good impact. We're hoping so.
Awesome.
So stay tuned. We've got a lot to evolve there. But, you know, packaging, people, there's nothing nicer than getting something that looks great. So packaging is crucial. And I think already we've seen huge improvement and growth in the way people package products. I'm a sucker for packaging. I love nothing more than buying something online and being completely blown away when I open the package and what's inside. And delivering that daily, obviously not to the same scale, is pretty important. But yeah, it's the experience. I mean, really, it's telling the right stories and creating the connection for people so that, you know, it's just always cool to buy from your brand. People want to be cool. in a nutshell.
Absolutely, absolutely.
When you look at things like Kmart, Kmart was a discount retail store, and they're suddenly so cool that they've got cult following and closed Facebook groups and products sell out before the first day's over of trading when they're released.
I will ask you one of the questions that I was going to skip over, but I thought, bugger it. I'm just going to ask you anyway. What are some of the other brands that you really like out there, that outside of the coffee space and maybe outside of the beverage space?
Okay. So,
that you find it.
I think The Iconic's an amazing brand. I think the way they've established themselves and their service and delivery is incredible. But their packaging is great. Their range is fantastic. They really are great at that storytelling process. Like they suck you in and they tell a great story, which makes you buy of them. TDE, I actually listened to the lady who established that at the Business Chicks Forum recently here in Brisbane. She's only young and she's so smart. But
what was that? Sorry, TV?
TDE, the Daily Edited. And that comes back.
Oh, okay,
So that's leather accessories around phone cases and personalized bags and makeup bags and compendiums and all of that thing. And I think the personalization, so being able to customize it to the customer right in front. And you can go into Myer stores and order on the spot and they will literally monogram it in front of you.
Nice.
So I think what they've done as a brand and their social media is brilliant. I mean, social media is so crucial to the brand of things now, like how brands are positioned. I love Kmart. I think what Kmart's done and the way they've revolutionised themselves is literally incredible. I mean, they were nearly going to be shut down and sort of merged with Coles. And now, as I said, they've just got this cult following. I mean, people are bashing the doors down to get their vacuum cleaners. It's pretty incredible.
I'm still struggling to deal with the new store layout.
I don't love the store layout.
I just don't get the whole, you know, checkout in the middle of the store thing.
I think it's funny, but then you ask the question from a marketing perspective, are they creating the feeling of trust? Because I always walk out feeling like, do I need to show you my bags? I have paid for this. Because you're walking past the rest of the store to get out, but you've already paid right at the back of the store. It doesn't make sense from a logistical perspective. But, you know, it's not, I can't say that, well, I haven't heard that they've got a downturn in sales. I think it's re-educating customers to the traditional store layout.
There must be some reason And I don't know what it is, but there must have obviously been a fair amount of thought gone into the reason they've decided to put the checkouts in the middle.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
For me, I don't understand it.
But. Well, I would tend to agree with you there. It's just, I suppose it's a matter of getting used to it. But even my son, who's 13, he said, I don't like this store. So he said, I don't like the way they've done this. He said, it's so weird how you have to walk back through the store with all your bags.
Yeah.
And no one wants to check that you've actually paid for it.
Well, I find that really confronting when people ask me if they can check my bags, because it's an assumption of guilt that you've been up to something when you may well have, you know, you're just having a look around or you're having a browse. And that I think is one of the reasons that retail shoots itself in the foot sometimes in terms of that customer experience.
True, but I think it's the catch-22, because remember the old days where you always had your returns and exchange desk at the front and your registers at the front. And so as you walked into the store, that's the first thing you saw. Mm. Whereas now I think they're creating that ambiance of come in. It's like we've set these shelves up. It's almost like your living room. Here we've got the latest doorstop and we've got these marble things. You know, like I think they're actually trying to create the notion of this is your home away from home. We've got all the greatest, latest and greatest things for you to buy. So you're not just bombarded with the transactional aspect of the traditional store layout. You're sort of sucked in by the products first and then you worry about it later. I don't know. I mean, that's just potentially my view on why they've done it.
We can debate this on in a more detail.
True.
In more detail at another time.
Those store layout and visual merchandisers involved in the conversation for the big why.
Well, I need to find someone from Kmart that I can interview for the show. That would probably be that's going to be my next challenge.
Well, I heard that they got the ex-head of Country Roads product management to come in as the consultant. And that's when everything started to turn. So whether they wanted to get the upmarket look at the everyday price, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess your Country Road. Well, yeah, they're not. I mean,
they've been around forever.
Yeah, I guess most department stores. They're. It's funny that for some unknown reason, you're quite happy to pay at Meijer or DJ's at a cash register that's deep inside the store.
True.
But then Kmart do it to you, and you're like, hold on a second, this doesn't feel right.
True, because
it's strange that there's that contrast against two brands that are offering exactly the same thing.
Mm. Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it?
Anyway, we could be in deep thought about this for hours. But
true.
Last question. If anybody wants to get hold of you, they want to ask you a question. I've just seen on your LinkedIn that you've got a job available for a marketing superstar as well.
If
they're interested in applying for that or they just want to talk to you, where's the best place to get hold of you?
So the link is I'm on LinkedIn, obviously. We have that position advertised on Seek. If you're on the Velo webpage, you'll see me listed under the senior management team. I'm always open to receiving emails.
Cool.
Yeah.
Anna, thank you very much for your...
I'm on Facebook, Instagram, you
people
name
will
it,
be
I'm
stalking
there.
You now, so.
I know, that's a bit dangerous.
Look, thank you very much for your time today. It's been very enlightening. We have gone
thank
completely
you.
Off topic with everything that I was going to talk about.
Oh, well, I hope I didn't lead you astray.
Honestly, it's been very interesting. So once again, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. Really enjoyed it.
That's pretty much it for episode number 42. Thank you for listening in. Thank you for joining us once again. And we really do appreciate it. As I say, if you get a chance to rate and review us, we would very much appreciate that. Otherwise, we look forward to seeing you guys next week.